John Supple.
How you doing?
Can you see me now?
I can see you.
Hey, well, welcome to the Edge Television Broadcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
I tell you what, you're looking good down there in Lima, Peru.
Thank you very much, sir. You're looking good with that hat.
Well, this is
about the hat, right?
Well, it is the hat. The hat has a personality of all of its own. I think we might even have a new program in the next couple of weeks called Ask the Hat. You can ask him any question you want.
There you go. That sounds good. Well, I'm ready for a whole bunch of questions if you're ready to ask them.
Well, we're ready. We got viewers here watching the show. They put their questions in a format, and it gets to me through our moderators. But and hopefully, for those of you who have questions for John, please make them succinct and make sure we know it is a question and not a statement. Well, John, welcome to the program. Wow, what a topic to have, especially after you may be aware of the Branson Conference that just took place.
Sure.
Answering the alien question. Man, so much information came out on that. And then I got this link from your film company there about this movie, Extraordinary, The Seeding of Abductions. First of all, let's roll this back. Kind of introduce yourself to our audience, and then we'll discuss, if you would, the progenesis of the development of this movie. Why did you take this task on to make this movie?
Sure. Well, my name is John Supple. I am a partner at J3 Films. I also am the producer and director of the film. And my background is in marketing communications as my day job and filmmaker by night. The origin story is, you know, for this is goes back to 2009. When Jack Roth, one of my partners at J3 Films, was doing some research on a project that he wanted to do and asked me if I would like to get involved with him. And it wound up leading us to an opportunity to work on a film about Stan Romanek. So that was step one. But during the process of making that film, one of the things that we found out was, especially after we had posted that we were going to be releasing the film, and once the film came out, specifically in 2017, it was re-released, and we had a tremendous outpouring from people basically saying, thank you so much for making this film. Now I realize that I'm not crazy. Now I realize that I'm not alone. Now I realize there's a whole community of people out there who've had experiences, you know, just like mine. We had over 700 of those messages through social media and emails. And with that as a catalyst, we felt like we wanted to make a more human story. We want to tell a story about the individual people who are having the experiences instead of just solely about the phenomena. Their experiences are profound, but we really wanted to portray the emotional impact that having something like this has on the individuals who've been through such a traumatic experience. So our intent was to make a film about the people more so than about the phenomena. The phenomena is there, plain as day, but we dive deeper into the emotional story behind the individuals who were involved.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you test the stories that you were given?
We vetted everybody. We started with a team of people. We had Yvonne Smith, Chase Klotsky, and Lori Wagner, who all kind of contributed at the front end to the research that we did, introducing us to individuals. We screened over 30 people, between 30 and 40 people, vetting phone calls that lasted anywhere from 2 to 4 hours, where we spent time with them on the phone before we felt good enough that we had the right people that we wanted to get in front of the camera. And the most important thing was that they have a compelling story to tell, one. Two, were they good at telling their story, sharing their story? Wanted to make sure that when these stories were shared that people understood that these are real people, you know, next-door neighbor, family member, someone you go to work with every day, someone you're in school with. We wanted to be very, very clear that this happens to people all over the world and, you know, very different from the stories that you've heard going back 30, 40 years about it being just people out on a dirt, you know, country road in the middle of nowhere getting abducted. This is happening to real people.
Mm-hmm. All right. A question from our streaming YouTube channel, live chat. Azur asks the question and says, John, did you find the interviewees to be credible in general?
I would say that Most of them, yes, absolutely. There was a few people that we immediately eliminated from the process because they're very, you know, there's two people in particular that one of their first questions was, well, how much are you paying? And we knew right away that those were the wrong people to be including. We wanted people who were compelled to tell their story, to risk telling their story, to feel aware of the fact that once I put my story out there, it's for the world to see forever and ever, and it's going to help advance awareness. So that was really the primary intention. But we spent a lot of time with the individuals, and I would say that the more time you spend with somebody who's been through an experience like this, the more you realize that the impact is not fleeting. It is profound. It is lasting. It's life-changing. The people who have connected to their stories, whether they had a conscious event happen or they've been regressed and have remembered more and more, mm-hmm. the changes that it makes to their lives is something that any of us who have not had the experience have no idea what it's like to go through something like that.
Mm-hmm. The abduction phenomena is in your research, just, and I don't know how you, you know, did, I don't know what your research pattern was on the, before you started talking to abductees, but did you research the history of abductions?
Yeah, my partner Jack in particular has been very much immersed in this for years. And he's more the deep dive researcher. I've always kind of taken the perspective of, I want to be around, you know, navigate around the outside of the circle so that I come in from a point of curiosity and wonder to a certain extent, so that when I'm involved in this, I'm asking questions from somebody who might be sitting in the audience asking the same questions. So the research is definitely there because of all the people that we've been connected to over the last several years who can help support us. The research that we did at the front end was a lot of input from Barbara Lamb and Yvonne Smith as far as the regressions were concerned, the patterns that you hear, talking to the individual researchers out in the field, Alejandro Rojas and Chase Klotsky in particular, tons and tons of circumstantial evidence that they could share with us based on people's individual stories. Mm-hmm. So we had an idea of what the abduction process was. We had an idea of what the extraterrestrial agenda was as it pertained to reproduction experiments. So when we were talking to people, we were looking for people whose stories would align with what would be considered kind of like the prototypical abduction story phenomena.
Mm-hmm. Cynthia Klaus asked, are these interviews, I guess it, well, I can add, I don't want to add to it. This is, are these medically backed? So I'm not sure what that means in this question.
Okay, so I could understand this is a question that we get asked all the time too, is that, you know, is there any medical proof? There's anything that can support it?
Okay.
Most of the time when we've had these people who've had these experiences, when they go to the doctor and they're sharing about something that was very, very different that happened to them, felt different about their body, one day they're pregnant, they're 3-4 months into their term, and they wake up the next morning, the baby's gone. No sign of losing it as a miscarriage. It's just disappeared. Nothing is there. They go into the doctors, and the doctors often their response is, well, the body absorbed the fetus.
All right.
And that our expectation there is that, okay, one, they don't want to go into the deep dive story about what the possibilities could be because they're not going to want to let their patients know something may have happened that we can't explain. So they always want to comfort their patients. They want to let their patients know that from a medical perspective, this is what we believe to happen. I would say that most of the women, when they were happening to them, they weren't thinking, I've been abducted. Mm-hmm. They weren't thinking about it from that perspective. So they weren't, you know, doing this, you know, research, investigative research. And the other part of it is it's very emotional. So the one thing that I would say to, you know, any woman that has been pregnant or any woman who has had a miscarriage, they understand the emotional roller coaster that they go on. They know their bodies. They know how their bodies react. They know what their cycles are like. They know what changes in their system mean to them and can usually point to something being different, something unusual happening to them. So that was one of the things that we wanted to make sure came through in the film. But we also took the time to let them answer these questions, and asked a lot of questions as it pertained about, well, what was the feeling like when you went to the doctor? What did the doctor say to you? So there's not like any medical evidence that says, yep, this child just vanished from the womb. We didn't have anything like that. None of them asked those type of questions to get those type of answers. But all of them that had visits to the doctor after these missing the fetuses were gone said that they were confused because there was a very abrupt answer to, this is why it happened, your body absorbed it. Mm-hmm. And they would, you know, maybe at the time say, well, science knows more than I do, I guess, right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, that body absorbing an excuse kind of reminds me of the early days of UFO activity, when the government would always use swamp gas. What you
swamp
saw was,
gas,
you know, you saw
it
in the
balloons.
Desert, you know, in your house. I mean, you got swamp grass everywhere. You know, it's like, it's ridiculous. Azura asked the question, have you got any visits from government agency after or during the research?
I would say that we're not touching upon anything that would be considered a red flag by the government, as far as we know. Mm-hmm. We have not had any interventions, you know, with the work that we've been doing in the first film or the second film, because we're only reporting on what's happening. We're not investigating behind the scenes and trying to get answers. Our third film, we will touch upon a little bit of that. The third film is going to have a little bit of a historical perspective. Also focus on three specific paradigms: the religious paradigm, the ascension paradigm, and the colonization paradigm. But we'll also spend part of the film, the third act is going to focus more on the government's role, government involvement, and we have a handful of whistleblowers who have told their stories and their involvement when they were in the military, what role they played with the military that's specific to the UFO phenomena.
Mm-hmm. And that colonization mentioned there, I will also, after the interview with you, I'm going to give a recap of Branson, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. It was talked about at the conference. Mm-hmm. Jack Summerfield says, John, what is the agenda of the alien hybrids? To replace real humans, but to pretend they're one of us until that time?
So this is the hardest part, I think, with all of this, is because we don't know. We don't know what the ultimate objective is. And there are many different theories. And that's one of the things that we'll explore a little bit deeper, you know, in the next film, is that depending on what your belief paradigm is, the outcome is very different. The colonization one is not good. The colonization explanation is that they're here to replace us, and that it's not good news. On the opposite side of the coin is the ascension, that they're here to help raise us to a higher vibration, to take us to the next level of our spiritual, emotional, psychological, interdimensional journey. Then the religious one is that the Bible's 100% right 100% of the time. So all three of those paradigms believe in one thing, that the aliens exist, they're abducting people for sexual reproduction and hybridization programs, but their outcomes, their end games are very, very different. So to say that one story's right and another one's wrong is hard at this point, because there's no tangible evidence that points in one direction. Although if somebody is a firm believer in one of those paradigms, they're yelling and screaming right now saying, you don't know what you're talking about, because this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do is present the information in a way that isn't definitively saying that this is what is going on. We don't have an agenda. What we're trying to do is share information through engaging, entertaining, and stimulating content that begs people to ask themselves the question, what if this is true? And then once you ask yourself that question, you wind up doing more research. You want to find more answers. And there's a lot of different rabbit holes that you can go down to determine what is or isn't or may be happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would agree with there. Nobody knows for sure. But let me ask you something. The information regarding UFOs is accelerating at a tremendous pace. Now, some have suggested that the release of the Navy planes footage, I think it's known as the Tic Tac videos, is really ultimately disclosure. That there's no need for a big meeting for the country to the announcement to be made. To me, they just made the announcement so subtly that I don't even think people recognized the gravity that these videos were mm-hmm. are said to be true from the Defense Department itself.
Right, and my take on that is that you know, if you believe in everything that has happened from 1947 until today, that we're on this journey of information gathering, we're on this journey of investigation and discovery, and then some people are trying to prove what is and isn't happening. And whether you believe it or you're trying to discredit it, whether you're a serious investigator or a casual observer, we have been inundated with information over the last 50 years that is guiding us to, well, more than 50, 70 years, that is guiding us to a point where we don't even react. Mm-hmm. We're kind of like, oh yeah, that makes sense. We've seen enough movies. We've heard enough stories. But you still see in the media, you know, comments about in stories that will say flying saucers or you know, little green men, or they do it in such a demeaning way,
right,
as to kind of, it almost feels like it's trying to couch it and push it aside. But with evidence coming out, where, you know, we're not saying, you know, the government's not saying that there's intelligent beings behind these crafts. They're just saying they don't know what they are, mm-hmm. and they can't quite comprehend how they're moving in the way that they're moving. Mm-hmm. The logical conclusion is that there's something, you know, maneuvering those that is beyond what we can comprehend and understand. So, you know, it's almost as if the government or the leadership of the planet is doing this slow trickle, mm-hmm. as opposed to this, you know, general announcement. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of different ways to interpret that. I think it's more a matter of, let's focus on the technology as opposed to what's manning the technology, what's, mm-hmm. you know, driving the technology. Mm-hmm. So if this soft disclosure of technology happens first, when we get to the point where there is discussions about, you know, the intelligent life that's behind it, I don't think you're going to get an announcement from any global leader saying, here they are. I think what you're going to do is have more and more people sharing their individual stories to the point where the disclosure really happens from acceptance from the public that this is happening, mm-hmm. and this is happening to so many people. And there are so many people who believe that this is, you know, sleep paralysis or some sort of a psychosis. And what if that is true? We don't know those things yet, but it seems that when you have stories being shared by so many different people that have so many similarities, that becomes in and of itself evidence that we should be paying attention.
Mm-hmm. Numerically, do you have any idea how many people have been abducted? I mean, obviously your movie deals with a number of them. You were able to find mm-hmm. these people. And if you were able to find them as a production company, then certainly there's a whole lot more out there. What would you suspect?
Well, the Roper poll that was done, and I think this was just in the United States, I think it was back in the late 90s, early 2000s, said 1 in 50 people said that they'd had some sort of an abduction encounter, an abduction experience, or believed that they had had some sort of an abduction experience. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge number of people. That's in the millions of people in the U.S. alone. Mm-hmm. So if you start to think about it from that point of view, I think it's more a matter of it becoming part of the public conversation. So if more and more people are having some sort of an experience, it should be motivational. It should behoove us to go out and find more of those stories. So really what we're trying to do more than anything, more than trying to shed light on some fantastical thing that makes no sense, because it's really hard for us who have not been through any of these experiences to embrace it and say that this is indeed what's happening. So it's shocking when you start to think about there's hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people who've gone through these sexual reproduction type of experiments. So what we need to do is get more and more of those stories out, share the from the people perspective, than just focusing on the objects in the sky.
Mm-hmm. I see one of our previous guests, Paul Cici, said in the live chat, there are millions worldwide, and you just really just said the same thing. I remember we had Dr. David Jacobs on the program, and he sure. suggested in the millions. But you are talking, when you get to that level, then you are talking about replacement. You're talking about replacing the humans themselves with some sort of hybrid. And if those are it's conjecture, of course, about the number, but it could be substantially more. It sounds to me with all the revelations of the sightings and such going on now, they could be much higher than that. Another question came in. In your opinion, is this a phenomena interdimensional or extraterrestrial in origin?
So that's a real good question. And that's one of those ones that what we think people should be doing is not just thinking about, okay, is this alien phenomena happening? Once you go from there's an object in the sky and I'm recognizing that, to abductions are happening and I'm recognizing that, to people are being abducted for reproductive purposes, to hybridization programs, to seeing children. If you can compartmentalize each of those and accept those, the next logical question is why? Why are they doing it? So that opens up a ton of different possibilities. So then you start asking the questions, is it a multiverse? Is it interdimensional? There are people from the religious perspective that will say that this is angels and demons. This is how it's all playing out. There are people who believe that they're here to help us, not necessarily replace us. It's an integration. In the same way that, you know, we haven't destroyed humanity when there was colonization throughout the world. We're still discovering species on the planet. So there's a lot of discovery that happens every day. This may be a matter of not necessarily changing our DNA, but realigning our DNA or switching on certain parts of our DNA. Do I believe that? I don't know. I mean, I honestly have to let anybody who asks me these questions, I have no perspective of what it is or isn't. Mm-hmm. It's more a matter of, I think we need to listen to the people who are having these different types of experiences, because there's a lot of them, one. Two, their stories are very similar in nature when you look at all the different patterns. So you can't ignore when something there's a pattern in the data that keeps repeating itself over and over and over in these different stories. That's where you have to step back a little bit and say, I need to spend a little bit more time. I need to do a little bit more research. And that's a big component in the film that anybody who has seen it, that the whole idea of expanding circles, and this is something from Ralph Waldo Emerson's essay, Circles, which is every time we expand our knowledge, the circle gets a little bit bigger, that opens an exponential more amount of questions that need to be answered. So every time we have a breakthrough, every time we expand thought, there's more questions that need to be answered because there's a lot that we didn't know once that breakthrough happens. Mm-hmm. So that's really where we are. We think that, you know, as we think about these things, we need to think about interdimensional. We need to think about, are we coexisting? We need to think about, is our DNA all the same? We need to think about, do we all come from the same source? And, you know, from the religious perspective, if God created us, he created them. You know, from that point of view. So how do we process all of this? The best way to do it is to be exposed to the information, to, you know, have your interests piqued or your paradigm shifted as a result of being exposed to the information. And really what we're hoping to do more than anything is to stimulate a conversation. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've got the trailer here. I don't know if you can see it there. Let's go ahead and play that, and then I'll have you comment on it once we run it. Let's see if we can pull that up.
The more that we actually learn about the world we're in, the greater the mysteries.
One in 50 American adults had experiences that could point to abduction.
It's extremely brave for someone to make their story public in this arena.
We'd look away and the ship would light up, and the next thing is just boom, it's gone.
Men and women have been taken for purposes of reproduction and hybridization.
I was abducted.
I wake up and there's such a bright light.
They would tell me to look in their eyes.
They're controlling your thoughts.
Inserting this gigantic tube inside of my body, it's painful. I'm now looking who this man is. He is inside of me. It's a screen image of the reptilian. They began the insemination process.
A new embryo is created, and that little hybridized embryo already formed is implanted in the womb, and she will gestate.
They always want the children fetuses.
I would go in for my appointment and there would just be no baby.
With a very long needle through the belly button, we go into the uterus and they would find the fetus.
It holds on to the fetus and pulls out.
And then they bring this little girl in the room.
And he said that she's yours.
This beautiful eyes, this face, and I see myself in the child.
She was emanating her feelings. I was shocked.
It was nobody's right to impregnate me and use me as a laboratory rat.
I went from 210 pounds to 115 pounds.
These beings that are doing the abducting don't have the same morality as we do.
They don't think what they're doing is wrong.
Hearing other people's accounts will make you go, okay, I'm not crazy. I'm not alone.
Who are we serving? We need to ask those questions.
Look, human beings take in animals in the wild and bred them. Can we be bred into something different? The answer is absolutely, of course we can.
Educate yourself, be open-minded.
Don't be dismissive.
People have been taken.
You can't ignore this anymore.
Make up your own mind. Don't let anyone ever tell you how to think.
Sorry, guys, not all VTs are good.
Wow, that was a pretty powerful trailer there, John.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
So the people that were did they have to sign a form saying they're telling the truth, or how did? Now I know you said you vetted them, but how did you guarantee that?
Well, there are no guarantees, and I think part of this, you know, some people say that a documentary film is supposed to take us on an investigative journey, and it's supposed to give us the answers that we need that we're looking for. Documentaries are meant primarily to help create awareness, educate people, you know, raise the vibration, you know, if you will. So our objective was to, you know, do the best job that we could in vetting people through using the experts that we had connections to and screening people and spending hours and hours of time with them before we even put a camera in front of them. And then each one of the interviews that we did ranged anywhere from like 4 hours to 9-10 hours. So we spent a lot of time with these people. And one thing that you don't see in an hour and 45 minute film is that when you spend an entire day or two with these people on the phone in front of them, you get to see the range of emotions. You get to see them when they're struggling with the emotional impact. You get to hear them in those quiet moments say, when I hear myself talk about this, it sounds absolutely crazy, but it happened. I know it happened to me. I can't deny what happened. So what I would encourage anybody who has ever doubted this phenomena or doubt the people, you know, I keep hearing over and over again from people like, you know, this is sleep paralysis, or the, you know, all the typical answers that you would get from people who don't believe. I think it comes from a place of fear, because if you were to spend time with the individual people who've had these experiences, you would not question their reality. You would not, because you will hear it in their voice, you will see it on their face, you will hear them tell their stories in such a compelling way that is very emotional, and you can't walk away after spending 9-10 hours with an individual who's telling their story and feel that what happened to them wasn't real. Now, the big question, and I caution everybody who believes in this, is something happened, but we don't know what it is. I will not deny that any of the people that we interviewed had something profound happen. There's no doubt in my mind that they had something profound. What that is, I'm not sure. I don't know. But it is something that if you start hearing, like I've said this now a couple times, you start hearing the same stories over and over, you have to sit back and wonder what's going on, why it's going on, and what it all means. What's the end result? What's the end game?
Has any of these women told you that they were taken aboard the craft?
Yeah, every single one of the people that we interviewed, both off camera and on camera, recollect having an abduction experience where they were taken aboard a craft.
Well, watching that trailer there, I mean, I can't listen to that and question their credibility. It sounds to me like they all have a similar story. They're not looking for publicity. Obviously, if they
No.
even suggest that they've had this done, you know, and I think one of the titles was, Who Do You Tell? You know, and for mm-hmm. those out there that are watching this program, they may have something like that happened already, but who do they tell? And I don't know that you can go to your religious leader and tell them. They'll maybe try to perform an exorcism on you.
Right.
But if it's
right.
not, but and maybe it's a demon involved somewhere, but maybe it's not, and you could do the exorcism, but you're not going to solve the problem.
No. And that's something that's important, too, and I'm glad you brought that up. One of the women that's featured in the film, she's silhouetted. She wanted to not divulge who she was. But she said, I do want to share my story because, and her story is fascinating. It is worthy of a documentary in and of itself. And we've had discussions with her about her particular case that happened back in the mid-90s in an entire small town in the Midwest experienced it. It's not just her. There's 60 people to this day that still get together for support group conversations to talk about what happened back in the mid-90s. So her thing in sharing the story with us is that I feel like I have to tell my story because I think other people out there need to know. So she's coming from a religious background, and she was very much challenged by what happened to her, and it challenged her belief system. Not that she believed less, but she tried to incorporate what happened to her into her religious beliefs, and she struggled, and it had a huge impact on her. And you know her big question is, if I had a hybrid child and I was shown my child, why would God do this to me? Why would God put me in a situation where I'm shown something that I can't be with, that I can't connect with, that I can't see? And she said it really challenged how I put all of this into context with my religious beliefs. So there are people who will sit there and say, okay, I don't know who to tell. I'm just going to keep my mouth shut because I don't know what's going to happen if I share it. It's destroyed careers. It's destroyed relationships. It's destroyed marriages. It's destroyed family dynamics. One of the things that was very important to us as we were going through this process, of all the people that we vetted, several of them were like, I'd love to tell my story, but I can't risk it. I cannot put myself out there. And we had some other really, really good experiences that would have been very compelling, but they just didn't feel comfortable. Everybody that was in the film had to sign a waiver saying that they were okay with this being used for the purposes of the film, and we made it very clear to each and every one of them before we even showed up at their door to interview them that when this movie comes out, millions of people are going to see it. Your story is going to be out there forever. Are you okay with that? And everybody that was in the film said, I am comfortable with sharing my story because I think it needs to be told. Am I terrified by how people might respond to it? Sure, because that's human nature. But I would say so far, the response of the film has been extremely positive. And I am, again, I mentioned with the first film, we got a ton of responses after the first film came out. We're getting more with this film. And a lot of it is people reaching out saying, thanks for doing this. This is important. I've had the same experiences happen to me. I haven't told anybody. I had one woman just this week sent me messages and said, I've never shared this with anybody. I've never told a soul about my experience. And I, you know, my response to hers was, thank you for being vulnerable. And her response back to me was, I can't believe that I shared this. I vowed that I never would share this, but I felt compelled after seeing the film that I needed to let somebody know that I had this happen to me. So thank you very much for listening to me. Numerous people have reached out to us and started saying, well, I wonder if this happened to me because of X, Y, and Z. One of the things that we have found out as we've talked to different people who've, one, seen the film either in a theater when we had screenings for film festivals, or two, has had individual screenings or have seen it since the film released, is trigger events. That when they see something in the film, it makes them realize, oh my gosh, that might have happened to me. I may have had these experiences. We had one woman in particular who said, I need to process this. I need to think about this a little bit more before I even have a conversation with you. Because when I watched the film, there was a handful of things in there that made me realize something's happened to me.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the religious aspect. So have you confirmed that some women with a biblical worldview has had this happen to them?
Yes. Yeah. Two of the people in the film are religious, and the one town where the one woman who silhouetted her story. Again, I said, mentioned it happened to a lot of other people. There are was an Amish community in that area at the time that this happened, and several women in this one Amish region were pregnant at the same time. They were all pregnant at the same time, and every single woman on that street lost their child at the same time. This was all during when this phenomena was happening. So, you know, when you're challenging, you know, religious belief structures and what you've come to know and trust and believe that is based on faith, when something like this happens, which is also based on faith, it rocks you. It makes you wonder, okay, how do I? It's not so much about I don't believe in my religious paradigm anymore. It's more a matter of how do I fit this in? Mm-hmm. How does this fit within what I, you know, believe my entire life? So that's the biggest challenge, I think, is how do I find a place for this within my religious beliefs and in my mind to embrace it, or do I embrace it or do I push it away?
Well, I'm not going to answer for the people that believe that way, but I would say that when somebody say, well, God would never allow me, you know, to have this happen to me because, you know, I'm protected by God, you know, mm-hmm. it's a matter of faith, and I know people believe that. But then the response could be that, well, have you ever been in a car wreck? Do you know any of your brothers or sisters been killed? I mean, Middle East, have they been, there's extinctions for religious people of the Christian faith. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot of, you know, they didn't escape those events. There's, I mean, almost ethnic cleansings in some parts of the Middle East. So I'm not, so when it comes to abduction, I don't know that, I'll use the word Christian here, are safe. But maybe there's a spiritual way they can battle and stop it. But I'm just saying that things of the earth, weird things can happen. You know, I don't know that they necessarily get a pass, but there must be a way that's different than say everybody else. John, when you mentioned about stress in a family, and I know there's one. Let me pull up this graphic here. This is from the film, just a shot there. But did husbands or husbands ever say to their wives, "How did you get pregnant?" And you know, because you obviously maybe he's impotent. Let's just say maybe they haven't done anything, and all of a sudden mm-hmm. she's got a fetus, as you say, you know, as we say, baby. But is this what you're talking about?
So yeah, there's a couple of stories in the film that are important to talk about. Two in particular. The one with April Molloy. She and her husband had a son, or had a daughter, and wanted to have another child. So they had been trying again. The first child, I think, was two years old, and they were trying to have another child. And she started, during this time period, had several miscarriages, had horrific nightmares, and was starting to have these dreams of being abducted. Got really bad. She had a one specific abduction experience where she said that, "I remember that they told me that this time it's yours to keep, or baby conceived." It was basically, the message was, "You're going to be able to keep this one." So her take and her husband's take was that we got pregnant and they made sure that this baby was going to survive. And this is, and April and her husband are religious. Mm. And they believe that there was an intervention, and that, and to this day, their child has had some pretty profound things happen with him. Very perceptive. He's constantly looking at the sky. He anticipates things that are going to happen before they happen, and talks about them, and then they happen. So they believe that there was some sort of, they're not going to come out and say that their child is an alien or a hybrid child. They're saying something happened profound that allowed this to happen, and it's impacted, you know, our son. And we see that despite the other harrowing experiences that she had, which included rape, of, you know, sexual intercourse with a being against her will. She said, as harrowing as those experiences were, I did get my son as an end result, and I can embrace that. I can find the positive in that. So that's another important thing to talk about too, is that a lot of first reactions from some people is that if this ever happened to me, I don't know if I could get out of bed, you know, the next day. I don't know if I could function in society. I don't know if I could go to work. But every one of these people who've been through something like this, it is a profound event for them. It is impactful. But they do find a way to move on. They do find a way to fit it in. Some people, Geraldine Orozco, six-figure income. She was engaged to get married. Based on the events that happened to her, she had a couple of regressions within a month of each other. And after the first one, she broke off her engagement. After the second one, she quit her career and said, based on what I've been shown, what I've been awakened to, what has been activated within me, I have to do all this to help other people. She left everything else behind and moved forward. So her response to her experiences was, I need to help people. Other people pull in. Other people have that they can't talk about it, or they don't know who to talk to, and they need to find somebody to talk to. And that's one of the things I would love to mention too, is that towards the end of the film in the closing credits, we do have a link on our website. So it's the j3films.com/support, and on that support page there are a listing of not only some of the people that were in the film and how to reach out to them, but also other individuals and organizations that are there to help people who've been through these experiences. Because the three basic goals of the film was to create awareness that this is happening, to help people who might not know about it or be on the fence about it, understand that something is happening that we don't quite understand if we've never been through it. So creating that awareness. Two, to be compassionate towards the people who've had these experiences. We're there for people when there's a loss in their family, when they have diseases, when there's a divorce, people in their lives that are challenged, physically challenged. We're there to help them, to nurture them, support them. But when you hear about abduction experiences, that's usually something that is a trigger for people to walk away, to avoid it, to, I don't want to be a part of that. And these people have been through something traumatic. They deserve empathy from us. And then the third thing is to encourage community, for the people who've had the experience. When they see a film like this, their initial response is going to be, wow, I didn't realize this many people. I didn't realize that these things were happening to other people too. I need to find a place to tell my story. And it's not like we're encouraging people to run out and tell their stories, but if anybody is comfortable with sharing their story, they'll find tremendous relief and support in dealing with people, in talking with people, in sharing with people who've been through something similar to them. So we think that's very important. Part of this film is to encourage people to be supportive and also to get support.
Mm-hmm. And in case you're just joining the broadcast on our Newsmaker line all the way from Lima, Peru, John Sumple, director of The Extraordinary, The Seeding Abductions. John, where can people get that movie, by the way?
The easiest place that you can go is to the film's website, which is extraordinarytheseeding.com. Mm-hmm. In that site, it has links to all the different digital platforms. But as of this past Tuesday, September 17th, the film is now also available in North America on all digital platforms, or on all cable platforms. So if your cable provider has pay-per-view and you have that service, mm-hmm. you should be able to find the film in the pay-per-views section on your cable system provider.
Okay. And I see one of our chat moderators just put a link in our live chat. By the way, for those of you who want to interact with the program, the live chat button is on the left side of the website. We're simulcasting on our YouTube channel, our website, and we're also streaming the audio on our TuneIn Radio program channel there. So if you have a question for John, you can put it through the link that says guest suggestion or guest question at the very top of the program. So, you know, initially, when there were years ago, anytime somebody mentioned, we mentioned swamp gas, but the system seemed to built in the minds of most Americans, and most people worldwide, if somebody says that claims they see a UFO, to instantly ridicule them. Mm-hmm. You're very serious about this, and I can see that, that you have empathy. I can just see it just coming off of you, John, that, you know, these serious things have happened to people. They don't need to be ridiculed. And it's too bad we had to get to this point, because I'm sure the alien abduction or fetus implantation and experiments, those have been going on, have been reported as long as far as I know, sure. as long as the UFO phenomena has been reported, and of course people were ridiculed, and mm-hmm. so it, you know, it takes today and with the help of your film to sort of give people the knowledge that maybe mm-hmm. they shouldn't be ridiculed. You should not be ridiculing sure. people when they say that. I can't imagine anybody want to say, gee, I got implanted with a you know, an alien
right.
hybrid fetus, or whatever.
You're just not going to hear people coming out and saying that. Mm-hmm. But we really don't think this film could have been made even 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. There wouldn't have been an appetite for it. So I think, you know, all of the things that have been happening, all the news that has been coming out, especially over the last 2 years, since the New York Times story in December of 2017, that kind of shifted the conversation to a global conversation that what this is happening, and the U.S. government is acknowledging that they don't know what these objects are in the sky that are traveling at unbelievable speeds. Mm-hmm. So, you know, once the conversation gets to that level, there is more of a, not that people are going to embrace it. I think, you know, one of the things I could talk about too that I find interesting is that on our Facebook page, and that's another page that people can go to, is facebook.com/ex2theseeding. There's a lot of engagement in some of the current trailer that is playing on the site. We have, I think, over 400 or 500 different comments that have gone through that, and the people that are commenting are, it's polarizing, just like anything else, whether it's government, religion. Let's bring up the whole abduction phenomena. People are, their beliefs are, this is what I know, this is what I believe, therefore you're wrong. Mm-hmm. If someone is a skeptic, or someone believes that is ridiculous and it's not true, all I would ask for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, is let's just pose one simple question and talk about it from that perspective. Just bear with me and just do me a favor and listen through. Is what if it is true? What does that mean? What does that mean to us as humanity? It doesn't necessarily mean the end of times. It could mean, wow, let's start looking at our existence from a galactic perspective, not just an earthbound perspective. And what does that mean? Maybe that's enriching. Maybe that's positive. Maybe integrating with something that is more advanced than we are could be a hugely positive thing. So maybe we should look at it from the perspective of that it could be an important event. It could be, you know, it just, to me, I go back to the whole idea of, you know, thousands of years ago, people believed that the world was flat. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of years ago, people believed that the Earth was the center of the universe. In the late 1800s, the U.S. Patent Office was saying that they felt that they could basically shut down because everything that was important that ever needed to be invented was already invented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, look where we've come in the last 120 years. Look where we've come in the last 2,000 or 3,000 years. Just ask yourself the question, what if it is all true? And start to stimulate that conversation in your own mind, or talk to people that you feel comfortable talking to.
John,
but you know, where do we go from here? That's the big question. Is okay, so if what has happened in the past over the last 100 years, you know, 2,000 years, 5,000 years, what is it going to be like 100 years from now? What are we going to be looking at and going like, I can't believe that they didn't believe in this 100 years ago? Those are the type of things that I'm just asking people to ask those questions and think about those. Don't just be mired in where we are at this very moment. Think about in 100 years from now, the advancements that are going to happen from this day forward. People 100 years from now are going to look back at us and say, I can't believe they were that myopic in their thinking.
So you're down there in Lima, Peru. Are they more open to this type of conversation than, say, here in the United States?
To be honest with you, I have not engaged too much in that. My wife and I are on an open-ended travel journey, so we're wow. passing through Peru for the next couple of months. But I have to say that over the course of the last year, I've been traveling through Mexico and South America, and we've done a lot of archaeological explorations and guided tours, and have had a chance to talk with a lot of people, indigenous people, mm-hmm. and ask I ask everywhere I go about their relationship historically, the oral history that's passed down from generations about the Star People. And every single person that I've spoken to says, oh yeah, we that's a very big part of our oral history, a big part of our belief system, our structure. Now, does that mean it's UFOs and aliens? Don't know, but it does mean that there was something out there that they believed was coming down and visiting them and talking with them and sharing things with them. So it is interesting that when you spend time with people who have had that as part of their culture, their heritage, they're comfortable talking about it. Mm. They don't have any issue with it. And that has been an eye-opener.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, you were talking just moments ago about the positive aspects of this whole type of thing, but now in the film there toward the end, the guy said, well, I don't know if this is all good here. So but what about the I know, sir, that there, obviously the guy, it said in that film trailer the guy lost 150 pounds, but what are they doing for men? Are they taking sperm from men, or what's going on there?
Yeah, so the men, this is not just a female phenomenon by any means, but the unexplained pregnancy part obviously is a big part of it. And the other story I didn't mention was, you mentioned about it must be difficult for people who had, you know, a partner gets pregnant. Well, Geraldine said, I wasn't sexually active and I got pregnant on more than one occasion. She goes, I know my cycle. I know I'm like clockwork to the T, and there was on more than one occasion where I became pregnant. Another person in the film, Sierra Neblina, is a lifelong lesbian, has never been with a man before. She wakes up one morning pregnant, and she carried the baby into her fourth month before the baby disappeared. She was in a relationship with somebody. It challenged that relationship to the point where the person was like, I want to believe you, but I can't help but thinking that you slept with a man.
Wow. And
that's okay. A challenge. So just that in and of itself makes you sit there and go, okay, so that is a unique way to look at this. But, you know, as far as the males are concerned, yes, the extraction of semen that is used for the purposes of kind of like mixing male, female in with a third party, so to speak, an alien DNA into the mix. Mm-hmm. But Rob's situation in the film was a little bit different. And we included it in there because we wanted to make people understand that reproduction is not just based on the way that we know. It's not solely about sexual intercourse. There's a variety of different ways that things could be reproduced, that the existence of alien DNA or alien reproduction. His experience was more about shared consciousness, this whole idea that his consciousness was being removed from his body and was used in alien clones. For purposes, as he says in the films, God knows what, I don't know. So there are different ways that this experimentation, this reproduction, this sharing of human DNA and consciousness is being discussed and shared by the people who've had the experiences.
Yeah. On a lighter note, when I saw, looking at this graphic here, crazy thought, you talk about the advancement of humankind. Well, 20 years ago, it was 3 men and a baby. Now we got 3 aliens and a baby. So I don't know, man.
That could be a movie.
That can happen. Hey, let's get to another question down here. This is from Raul. It says, what do you think about the Area 51 march going on?
I think it's a couple ways to look at that. I think that for the purposes of it creating awareness in a national and somewhat global way, I think it's important because it's taking the conversation it's taking the conversation from the shadows and moving it into the light. So instead of it being something that's only discussed amongst the fringe believers, there's an opportunity to have a global conversation about it. So from that point of view, I think it's shedding light on something. The unfortunate part about it is it's being portrayed as a farce. It's being, you know, looked at as, you know, a bunch of people are going to go out there just because it's a place to be. Would anybody seriously go and try to invade a military installation? I find that somewhat preposterous. Mm-hmm. But if if it's done peacefully, if it's done in a way that encourages discussion and awareness, then it's a positive. If the discussion and the awareness is that it's ridiculed, then I think that it winds up having more of a negative flavor to it.
Mm-hmm. All right, another question came in. It says, is there possibly a religious common denominator between the abductees?
I think, again, this is my assessment based on what I've been exposed to, is that people who have a faith-driven paradigm and belief system, everything points back to God. Everything is about, you know, what I've been led to believe, what drives my faith, what drives my daily activity, comes from a narrative that I have been instructed to believe for a long time. So now you're inserting something that I've never been aware of, was never comfortable with, and you're telling me that it's real, that it's happening. How do I make that work with my religious belief system? I kind of think about it more, again, my own personal belief. I have no proof of this, but if we all come from the same source, whether you want to call that source God or, you know, a collective consciousness or energy, whatever that source is, we all came from the same place. So our DNA is probably the same. Our historical relevance is probably the same. What isn't the same is our awareness of it. So I look at it as like we all come from the same cosmic dust. We all came from the same origin. So we're probably connected. And if we're probably connected, we should spend more time thinking about what does that connection mean as opposed to being frightened by it.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Southern Boy says, what does the DNA look like after they've messed with us?
Well, here's a question too that, you know, we don't know. We've done no analysis on DNA, but the belief system and people who have done research, not necessarily scientific research, I'm not even aware that any scientific research exists other than DNA testing, where there could be a portion of unknown DNA. So there are people who have had abduction experiences when they have their DNA tested, you know, through the 123 and the
Ancestry.com.
Yeah, Ancestry. Yeah, when they'll say that there's unknown DNA, a portion of their DNA. We've heard stories of people who've had up to 25-30% unknown DNA. What does that mean? How do you not know what's in their DNA? It's undescribed. Most people might be in the 1-2% of unknown. But when you're talking about people who are anywhere above that, it's an anomaly. And it's not just one or two people. There's not a lot, you know, tons of outliers, or not just a few outliers. There's a lot of people who've had, you know, things like that. But I think the question is more a matter of, we probably have all the same DNA. It's just certain parts of it are being activated. In the same way that we can say, you know, most humans only use 10% of their brain capacity, maybe we're not aware of at this time. Science has allowed us to realize what is and isn't activated. Is there part of our DNA code that can be subtly adjusted to yield a different result?
Paul asks this question. Says, have you ever heard of young children given a light pressing against their chest?
A light?
A light pressing. I think... I would assume, Paul, if you could clarify that question. It seems like maybe somebody pushing against their chest. I don't know.
I've heard not necessarily children have had that, but that is something that we have heard from many people that we've had discussions with, is that there's a sense of pressure, on their body, or a sense of awareness that something is about to happen. And those are kind of like signals to them that, uh-oh, an abduction. Mm-hmm. You know, if they've had it, if they're conscious of it. It's like the atmosphere in the room changes, or it feels heavier, or there's like a tingling sensation on their body. It's like there's a precursor that something is going to happen, and we have heard about that with individuals. Children, we haven't done a lot of interview of children. Actually, we've done no serious. We've had conversations with a few people who have children, who have had experiences, and some of them have been profound. and worthy of exploration, you know, on that. Mary Rodwell is doing amazing work with children, and she recently wrote a book called The New Human that starts to explore where we're evolving to as a result of some of the things that she's hearing from children who have had, would say that they're in touch with their hybrid brethren. Mm. So, you know, interesting stories.
Okay. Question came in. It says, did anybody enjoy or feel good about their abduction experience?
Now, this is something that I find to be an interesting conversation, because there are a lot of people who are coming from the point of view that the abduction experience, if you believe in ascension, it's connecting you. It's creating an awareness and reconnecting you to what you already believed, the contract that you signed, that you were going to come and you were going to do this work in this lifetime, or you were going to play a role in where we go next. Mm-hmm. We have yet to encounter anybody who has shared solely positive. Some people have come to the conclusion that they, once they've been regressed, that they reconnect to that story. But mm-hmm. initially, when they've had the experience, it wasn't positive. It was frightening, terrifying, and traumatic. But through regression or connection to source or connection to their hybrid families, some people will tell you that they're hybrids here on Earth and they're here to help. Mm-hmm. That they're here to deliver a message, that they're here to support people as they go through this. I think that's a big challenge for a lot of people to believe that they're here, they're already among us.
Mm-hmm. Frank Johnson says, did the people you interviewed all say they had sleep paralysis?
None of them. It would say that it was sleep paralysis as defined from a medical perspective, but all of them would say that, I would say several of them would say that when the event happened, they're conscious. It was a conscious experience, they weren't sleeping, they weren't dreaming. Said I was very conscious and my body did, I couldn't move. Mm-hmm. I couldn't move. The one woman that's silhouetted in the film, she said she was sitting in a chair, she was watching TV, and all of a sudden, she said she saw a face appear around the corner and from her kitchen, and she said immediately she couldn't move. She said, I tried so hard to get out of that chair, and I could not move out of my chair. Mm. She said she had to fight it. I had to fight it really hard to get out of my chair and go into my bedroom to tell my husband what had just happened. So there is that. You know, Sierra had that happen with her. Rob talks about it as well. So a lot of people have that sense that I can't move. You know, I want to move. I'm, you know, in this, you know, it's not a fight mode, it's a flight mode, and they can't, they're frozen, they can't move. But sleep paralysis would suggest that you are, it's more of a subconscious event than it is a conscious one.
I thought I saw where a lady said that the extraction of the fetus comes through the belly button. Is that true in most cases?
I think it's probably more than one way, but specifically to two of the experiences discussed in the film, two people said that that was one of the ways that they extracted the fetus.
In that particular case, it seems that there would be a physical mark on the outside.
You would think, but with I'm gonna say 1, 2, 3 of the people who we interviewed for the film. Four of the people that we interviewed for the film said that in future gynecological exams, that their doctors said that they have a ton of scar tissue. Mm-hmm. And that would usually lead a doctor to believe that they had had abortions. Mm-hmm. And none of these women had. So they're like, you know, like, what is going on in your uterus? Why is there all these lesions and scar tissue? And their answer would be, well, because of my abduction experiences.
Hmm. I'm just going to throw this out there for those people watching the show. Is there any man or woman that you believe you have been abducted, or you've been implanted, or you've had any alien participation at all against your will? Question come in. Have the abductions changed in the decades following the 60s? Or as far as you go back in any kind of research, are they similar, or does the story seem to be evolving in any way?
I think I'm not an expert in this area. Jack, my partner, is more dialed into this, but I would say that a major portion, a lot of the people who are having these abduction experiences for the reproductive purposes started in the 70s. And some people would say that they've, not to necessarily say that they've perfected it, but over the years there's been experimentation that would lead them to believe that we're to a point where the hybrid children are either one, if they can't survive on planet, they live off planet, but the ones that can survive on planet are here and have been here and are walking amongst us. So, you know, that's the big question. You know, are there aliens among us? Mm. And some people definitively would say absolutely, positively, there is no doubt in my mind that they are. Mm. So that would lead you to believe that there's been an evolution in the process of how the hybridization program has advanced. Now, there would be other people who would say, I would think because they're so advanced that they wouldn't have any issues doing this. They can fly all over the universe. You know, why would they choose Earth, and why would they be, you know, choosing people? And if they were choosing them, you would think that their science is so far advanced that they would have no problem doing the hybridization. Mm-hmm. That opens up an entire different conversation. Is, well, what is it about us that's so special? Why us? Why do they want to use our DNA? Why do they want to reproduce with us? That's a whole nother conversation and probably a whole nother movie.
Right.
You know, where you could explore those things.
A question come in for you, John. It says, are you aware that there's a cosmic war against mankind?
That's the question?
That's the question.
That's a big question.
Is there a cosmic war going on? Is there a war at all going on?
There are, again, this is a paradigm belief perspective. And I think that if you are from the a biblical perspective, people will point back to different texts that aren't included in the New Testament canon that point to the Nephilim, the fallen angels, and their, you know, the role that they played on Earth in creating hybrid beings. The fact that the Titans and the Giants that were here were interacting with humans and having offspring with them, and that you know, this war is something that is biblical. Other people will say that there are warring aliens out there, and we're just toiling away unaware of what's going on, you know, above us. You know, my response to that is, all of that could be true, but we don't know. We do not know. There's no definitive answer. So, and I'm not trying to belittle anybody who believes those things, because there's a line in the film that I think is very important. Unless it's happened to you, it's just a story. Mm-hmm. So if someone has had an experience where they can say to me or to you, I know for a fact that there is a war going on because I've seen it. I've been brought to it. I've been exposed to it. Mm-hmm. My question that I would ask in those situations is, okay, so there are people who say that they believe that there is an advancement that's going to be positive, an ascension. There's other people that believe in colonization. There are other people that believe in the religious paradigm, that the Bible is right 100% of the time. Is it possible that all of those are right? I don't know. And if it is possible, that's just... I mean, your processing would be, well, how is that anything any different than how humanity lives on this planet? We have different, you know, faiths. We have different traditions based on where you were born and raised. Mm-hmm. You know, chances are pretty good for all the Christians in the world. If you were born in India, you would be a Hindu. You know, so, you know, the fact that you were born where you were born, where there was Christianity, means that you embrace Christianity. That was a part of your culture, a part of your existence. So I maybe it is a matter of there's a variety of different things going on. We just don't know because we haven't had that experience. But we shouldn't shove away the people who say that I've had this experience. And I see all too often, especially in comments and social media, where someone states their belief, whether it's religious, whether it's ascension-based, whether it's colonization, whether they believe they've been taken, mm-hmm. and someone is quick to jump in and tell them they're wrong. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that's not a useful conversation to say, you're wrong, I'm right, if mm-hmm. someone's belief system is based on their own personal experience. Mm-hmm. So I would just challenge people to be a little bit more open when someone shares something that's not within their belief structure.
You kind of hit the edge broadcast one of our tenets here. This is about the 800th show since 2004, by the way. And during that time, of course, there's no specific genre we've ever tried to target on this program. So, you know, we'll have, you know, we've had, you know, a guy believe Elvis is alive. We've had, you know, of course, aliens, Bigfoot, chupacabra, near-death experiences, mm-hmm. near-hell experiences, angelic possession. I mean, so the topic is endless. And one of the things I've always kind of stressed is exactly what you just said, and that is, unless you were in the room, and somebody says that an alien appeared at the foot of my bed, which a lot of people say that, you know, and mm-hmm. if, you know, pre-programmed, and even it's pre-programmed in our psyche and almost like a defense mechanism. No, that didn't happen. You know, right. You were on something, you know, the first thing, you know, they want to know, were you drinking, you know, start going through a list of things, you
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
But unless we were in the room at that time, we can't say that's crazy. That's not even part of a conversation. That's not even a conversation. And, most people are predisposed to react like that when they hear what seems to be an outlandish experience. But we've had time travelers on this program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wasn't there. I can't say that they're not. But with the quantum physics and stuff and the bending of time and the way that the spaceships or the UFOs can use gravity to punch a hole through the universe and not even those kinds of things, the fantastic, it just keeps piling up. So we mm-hmm. can't instantly dismiss. And in order to learn and to grow, we need to be a little bit more sort of open. And people say when you're open, and then all the religious community say, oh, you just say you're open to demons. No, I didn't say that. I said open mm-hmm. to a conversation, to listen to a person's story. Like you said in the very beginning of the program, you're convinced that whatever happened, if it's not exactly what they say, something tremendous, traumatic happened to them, mm-hmm. and they don't need to be ridiculed as a result of it.
Now, one of the things that I would say to some of these, too, is that there are individuals who are looking for attention and feel that this is a story that if I share this, I'll get the attention that I need. Mm-hmm. Some people may be psychologically challenged and have some issues. There are, you know, schizophrenia and things like that. So, we can't say that anybody and everybody that shares the story, it's an accurate story. But, you know, I'll go back to that point is that I would implore anybody who thinks this is crazy talk, this is lunacy, is to sit down with somebody who's had an experience and spend hours with them and tell me at the end of that conversation, that time spent, that listening, that not judging, but listening to their story, listening to what they have to say, listening to what their experience, listening to how it impacted them. I would ask those people at the end of spending that time if they've been changed, if they've changed their viewpoints, if it's changed them at all and how they look at it. And I would, unless you are so stuck in your ways and you will not change your mind on anything, I think spending a day, if you spend a week with somebody and you are with them, working with them, traveling with them, spending time at dinner with them, you would see, wow, these are normal people. They're just like people that I know and spend time with. That would be one thing. The second thing would be they sound so convincing and they believe what happened to them is real. So what we're trying to do is get people to realize that you don't have to believe it. You don't have to understand it. You don't have to embrace it. But if somebody who's been through it has been profoundly impacted, don't dismiss it. Because it's their story. It's their journey. Mm-hmm. It's not yours. And usually the people that respond so negatively to it, it's fear. It's based on fear because it's challenging what they believe. And if it's religious or if you believe in another paradigm because, the existence of aliens, mm-hmm. because you're so strongly convinced that the evidence points to that, mm-hmm. Just say be open-minded. Mm-hmm. Just be open-minded to the idea that what you believe may be part of the equation, not all of the equation.
I would go just a little bit further with that and say that if, and again, we for those that instantly dismiss somebody's story, you know, typically, and like you said, it's almost a defense mechanism, automatic defense mechanism. Part of us, mm-hmm. we've been pre-programmed for that. But if that traumatic experience happened to them, dismissing them as crazy could hurt them, could damage them even more. That's not the kind of help that they need. If just to say they need help. Ridiculing them, and I got to tell you, John, personally, I've had some people on the show, and you talk about people that want attention. Of course, we've had people on this program over the years that one attention. And I could tell that you as a host, you learn that. And I'm sure you've learned that over the years, you
sure.
know, how to
Absolutely.
Dice through.
Mm-hmm.
And at some points I have to go from a host to, I don't want to say a therapist, but a person that displays empathy to see somebody who has a problem. And I gently move them, maybe perhaps to seek help in such a way, not to say you need to see somebody. I don't never do that. I mm-hmm. I gently nudge them a little bit, because that's all I can do from this side of the camera. That's all I can do.
Sure.
But I can tell, right. and some people need help. And my conversation will literally switch in the middle of it when all of a sudden I realize where they're at, from mm-hmm. maybe funny stories what they're telling to this is serious and this person needs help. You know, I come across that myself. Let's get to another question. It says, from Robert, it says, John, did you attend the Contact in the Desert conference?
I did. I was there.
Wow. How'd that go?
It was, we were actually there primarily because we were filming our next film, the third film that we're working on in this series, this extraordinary series. And we basically went there because that's where the experts were, and we scheduled time with a half a dozen different people that came over and we did interviews with. But I did have a chance to go into the venue and spend a little bit of time, not a lot, because we were primarily shooting at a house nearby. But I always find it interesting for a couple of reasons. One, because you have the thought leaders that are there, and there's an opportunity to glean a lot of information from what the individuals are sharing, especially from the researcher perspective. The other thing is, I mean, I've always been, and I'll probably catch hell for this, but
Uh-oh.
I've gone to a handful of these events, and there are a lot of people there who go because they want to hear the stories. They want to hear, and it's not necessarily that they're, be careful how I say this because I don't want to sound insensitive, but it's almost as if they're going, I'll give an example. There, when the very first time I went to a conference back in 2010, I wound up talking with this one woman because Travis Walton was speaking, and I asked, oh, have you seen him speak before? She goes, oh, I've seen him speak dozens of times. And I was thinking to myself, like, well, dozens of times, he's had one story. Now, if you hear him speak about his story once, you've heard him speak about his story. That's there's nothing more to the story. But it's no different than, I guess, that somebody who has a loves a certain rock band or music and they or a play and they like to go to see it whenever it comes to town. But there is this sense with some of the people, they're there because they enjoy, and the paranormal is the same way. It's just like it's filling a void for them. They feel like when I go to these, you know, there's electricity in the room. It's exciting. I would like to see more people who, you know, attend these events or the information shared in a way that it is it's shared in a way where people from all walks of life in all phases of their awareness, you know, in the whole phenomena, so that it isn't just appealing to the people who already believe or who want to be entertained by it. I'm not a big fan of going to a conference and seeing the inflated, you know, ETs. I don't like that. I just think it counters everything that these people, the stories that they're trying to share, is when it becomes more of a circus than it is about, you know, the realities that some people are suffering and dealing with and working through a life of being an abductee and what does that mean. And that's not to say that everybody's experience is negative and terrible and horrific. It's not, you know, but people have to go through something that challenges what they knew before their first experience happened.
Mm-hmm. Do you go on different speaking tours? You speak?
I do not. And I would say the reason why I don't is I don't want to be an insider. I don't want to be in the inner circle to know, you know, to be a part of that. I'd rather be the one on the outside looking in, because I think the stories are much more interesting when you do it from that perspective. So that's not to say that I dislike people. Not at all. I think there's a lot of amazing people in the researcher and investigator field. So in experiencer field too. So going for those reasons, I think, you know, is very important. But I don't want to be. I am not a fan of the cult of celebrity. I have no desire to do that. My reason for talking to you tonight, and some people will say, like, oh, he's just out to sell his movie. And my response to that would be, well, one, it costs money to make a film. So we do need to pay back the money that was invested into the film to have it made. So there is a portion of that. But I think the bigger thing is that what I learned in going, and here's the story that supports that. I always wanted to make a film as far back as I can remember. Did a lot of corporate videos and some projects back in the 90s and early 2000s, but never had a chance to do something that I would consider long format and a big deal. Until this opportunity presented itself with the first film that we did. Going through that process, my mentality was, once I'm done with this, I won't do anything else in this genre. I mean, there's no reason to keep doing that. I don't want to be pigeonholed. That's not what I'm about. I'm not going to be advancing the story and become one of the people that does the show circuit. That wasn't my goal. Mm-hmm. But the first film did very well, and our distributor came back to us and said, would you guys be interested in doing this again? And we would support it 100%. So it was just kind of like, oh, boy, do I want to do this? I really had to think about it. And what really got me going was once we decided on the story of the unexplained pregnancies and starting to talk to people, I realized that this was more about humanity than it was about phenomena. Mm. And it really hit home for me during the interviews where we were recording that this is my reason for being in this is not about sharing UFO stories. My reason for getting involved in this was to do storytelling around the human experience, mm-hmm. that people who go through this deserve the attention of their fellow humans in a way that isn't ridiculing, in a way that is supporting and understanding what they're going through, what their personal journey is. Mm-hmm. Don't have to understand it, but it would be very helpful for you to be there for them. To understand that they've been through something that they I mean, I've never been abducted that I'm aware of. I have no connection to it whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But when I sit down with people who've had that experience, I listen. I ask questions that and make them feel comfortable in going deeper and sharing their stories. I've asked people to close your eyes and take us through what you experienced when you were on craft. Gets them to expose their stories in a way that is more real, more human. So, you know, I feel like that's the reason why I do it. I know that my business partners, Jack Roth, Jamie Cernoff, Lori Wagner, all believe the same thing, that we're here to tell compelling stories. We're here to advance awareness. Entertaining, it has to be entertaining, otherwise people won't watch it. So that's a big part of it. But our ultimate goal is to share information that people are challenged by and get them to think about it a little bit differently and just, again, pose the question, what if it's true? Let's talk about it from that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Have you done a lot of these type of interviews?
I've done, it's for the films that we've done, I did all the interviews for this one, all the interviews in our first one, all the interviews in our third one. You get to the point where it is, there's a comfort level sitting across from somebody that's telling a story that you can't comprehend. And one of the things that I try to do is to get them to feel comfortable as quickly as possible, mm-hmm. so that they share their story completely. And from the heart, as opposed to circumstantially, this is what happened, A, B, C, D, E. I'll give you the process. I ask all those things, but then take it much, much deeper with the conversation about, okay, so tell us more about what you felt in that moment. What was that like for you in that moment? Mm-hmm. And we kind of came across that kind of as the formula because there's nothing else out there like that. There's no venue for people in the production video storytelling perspective that is allowing people to share their stories in the way that we allow in this film. So from that point of view, I think it's very, very different than anything that's out there. So, you know, again, we're not out to prove anything. This is not some scientific journey of discovery and proof and, you know, exposing people or turning them down. It's more about opening minds. And I'll share a story. I share this all the time whenever this comes up, is that when our first film came out back in 2013 at a film festival, it showed in Fort Lauderdale. I, at the time, had lived was living there and knew a lot of people. So when it got into that film festival, or I had lived there, but and so went back from Seattle, which is where I was living, and we had the opportunity to be around a lot of friends and family. Jack lived there at one point, has family there. Jamie has family there. I had a lot of friends there. So we had a huge crowd of people that came to support us, not a huge crowd of people that believed in the phenomena. Mm-hmm. So it was shocking to a lot of people what they saw, and specifically the evidence that pertained to the Stan Romanek story. So there was a lot of conversation around that. And then a friend of mine that I was visiting when we were there and stayed with, she, you know, came up to me after the film, said it was great, you know, really enjoyed it. But a couple of days later, she came to me and said, I really had to process this before I had a conversation, an intelligent conversation with you. And she said, this rocked me because I always thought that this was science fiction. I never had a place for this in my head as being something that could potentially be real. It blew her away. She said, it took me 2 days to get to the point where I could have a conversation with you about it. And she goes, it's really challenged me to think about this in a way that I never have before. It's challenged me to do a little more research, to find out a little bit more, to see, you know, how do I fit this in? Because if this is happening to people and I'm not aware of it, shame on me. Type of thing is that if I don't take this seriously and it is impacting people, I should pay attention to this a little bit more. And that to me was like music to my ears, because that was really our intention, was we want to raise awareness. That is a big part of why we do what we do.
I think you guys are doing a great job with that. And man, what a movie that is. John, we're getting near the end of the broadcast. Any kind of final thoughts you'd like to say, you go right ahead.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to share our perspective, to let people know why we do what we do. And it's not necessarily to be fantastic and pander to an audience that wants more. I just make a comment that when the first film came out, some people were upset that we didn't share more. It's like, well, we shared a story that we felt would resonate with people who've never heard this story before, not one with people who are aware of it. We want to move the conversation from the shadows into the light. We want to take it from the fringe and put it into the middle of the conversation, you know, with people who are in the middle of the bell curve. Not people who don't believe and not people who already believe, but hey, let's have a conversation with people in that middle, because that's when we start to have conversations that are meaningful, that question, in the same way that, you know, the expanding circle theme that is throughout the film, is that we want to challenge people to think differently. We want to challenge people to open their minds to the possibility that this very well could be true.
Wow, awesome. Well, John Semple, I appreciate you coming on the program all the way from Lima, Peru tonight. Can we have you back on the program again sometime?
Absolutely. Anytime you want, I would be more than happy to come on and talk with you. It's been great. I really appreciate your style too, because you're not dictating a narrative, you're allowing it to unfold, so definitely appreciated.
All right. I appreciate you coming on the show, and we'll have you back again, John. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everybody.